It was God. God said, shut him up. Oh, now I got that on tape. Sorry, they're giving me a hard time as usual. You know, it's just an abuse meeting here. Oh, all right. So, guys, we are at the key pages of the book. You know, we are at the point where we're going to see Bill W. give up, surrender, take the second through nine steps. And I was talking to Mark, we were talking, every new person should read this with somebody who understands it. For those who can't do that, that's why I do this podcast site, so you can listen to it, somebody go through it. These pages are really powerful, we'll see. And they mark the beginning of our recovery, because he took the steps, he found this relationship we're going to read about. Then he tried, you're going to see next week, we're going to look at what happened after he took these steps, the change in this man who was dying on page 8, right? And then he went to Bill, and we're here today. And so in the first 10 pages, we got to where Bill W. in 1934 had hit bottom. He was a very bright man, had been very successful, but alcohol and alcoholism had destroyed his life. And he was dying in the hospital, and he had no way out. He left the hospital, and he was sitting in his kitchen in November 1934, and an old friend who had never been sober came to see him, named Ebbie Thatcher. And that's a whole story in itself, and you can get on the site, and I have several talks on AA history, The Hand of God, and how all these people came together for that one moment in his kitchen. And when Ebbie called him, he said, great, he's going to have somebody to drink with. And he felt really good because he had enough booze concealed throughout the house the last all day and night, and he was going to hide some. He's already planning how he's hiding his booze at night. And then Ebbie came, and Ebbie was sober. This kind of shocked Bill. And he says he's sober. He'd never seen him sober. And he had often said that if he drank like Ebbie, he would quit. But Ebbie Thatcher was 60 days sober, had worked the Oxford Group steps, which were the basis of our 12 steps. And he had had a relationship with God. And part of the Oxford Group program was you had to give witness to somebody, testimony, which is similar to our 12th step. And he had to find somebody, and he thought of Bill W. Isn't that interesting? And he went over to Bill's house, and then he says he's sober. And then Ebbie told him that he had religion, found a religious idea and a simple program. And so Bill starts immediately to turn his mind off. He's dying, right? Right? He's just dying, but somebody's coming to give him some help, and immediately he closes his mind shut. Does that sound like an alcoholic? Yeah. Bill wanted to drink. He didn't want to hear anything. And then Ebbie talked a little bit about what had happened to him and how he had had a simple religious idea and a practical program of action, and it was obvious that it worked because he could see it. Bill could see it. And he said he came to pass along this experience to Bill W. And it says, if he would have it. And then Bill said, I had to be because I was hopeless. And then we got to the bottom of page 10, and he's starting to talk about God, Ebbie. So Bill's starting to give himself some reasons, you know, you know, when they talk to God and his mind closed shut. And so we get to the top of page 11. They're sitting in the kitchen. Now, the one thing about this story nobody likes to talk about is Bill was drinking when he was 12-stepped. You know, Bill was drinking, but he had quite a tolerance, I would imagine. And he's drinking while Ebbie, and he's arguing with Ebbie. And he said, to Christ, this is Bill W., I conceded the certainty of a great man. It was really nice of Bill, wasn't it? Not too closely followed by those who claimed him. Now, that's a very typical alcoholic statement, isn't it? We're self-centered, dying, and we're going to concede that he's pretty good. His moral teaching, most excellent. Wasn't that nice? For myself, and this is the key, I had adopted those parts which seemed convenient and not too difficult. The rest I disregarded. And I was thinking a lot of people do that with the program and the steps. You know, they'll come in and they'll do what they want, and they won't do what they don't want. And remember, it says if you want what we have, you have to be willing to go to any length to do it. And you can't do half measures. They won't work. You have to let go of all your ideas. Then he talks in the next paragraph about the wars and all these reasons why there couldn't be a God, because the world was such a mess. And so he says, I honestly doubted whether in any balance, and this is a word I hadn't seen before, they put words in the book, religions of mankind had done any good. Notice religions of man, not the gospel from God. You know, man's religions, not God's religion, had done any good, judging from what I'd seen in Europe, and since the power of God in human affairs was negligible. The brotherhood of man, a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed the boss. Universally certainly had me. So what had Bill? We call it ego, right? Edging God out, self-centeredness. The Bible talks about our sinful nature that we cannot escape, right? And it talks about the serpent and this power that's manipulating us to turn away from God. So now we get to the key paragraphs. So Ebbe sat before him, and he made the point-blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. Now, you can't argue with somebody who does that, right? I mean, you know, he's telling you his what's happened to him. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. They were actually going to lock him up. So I was about to lock him up. He was going to be locked up in Vermont, put in prison. They had asylums for alcoholics because Ebbe was a danger to himself and the community. And he was rescued by two men and brought to New York and worked the steps. And 60 days later, he's here at Bill's house. So how many days does it take before you can go help somebody? Well, here it was 60 days. When Bob Smith sobered up with Bill, they went 3 days later to find somebody else to work with. And so, why? Because people are dying. Why would you wait? And it says, like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. You see, Bill was completely defeated, and he was drinking, he had enough booze, he didn't have no solution. So he was considered himself hopeless. Why not? What is he going to do? It's like patients came to me with terminal cancer, and there's no treatment. I mean, so it is hopeless, powerless. So Bill considered that, but he didn't realize that God was going to change him, because then he talks about Ebbe had been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to life, a level of life better than the best he had ever known. Something had happened to Ebbe. So he asked this question, had this power originated in him? Well, obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me. And this was not at all. So something had to happen to Ebbe, because he knew Ebbe was powerless to quit drinking. That's why we are the greatest testimony of the power of God and the power of the 12 steps to someone else. Because they can't argue with what's happened to us. When we tell, like Corey's going to tell a story. I know it's powerful. I know I have great happiness for Corey's change. I know where he was almost 5 years ago, what's happened to him. And when you see Corey and you hear his story, you can't argue that this works. You may not want to do it, but you can't argue it. And it says, that floored me. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in the human heart. Now notice they didn't say the mind. We want to stay away from the alcoholic's mind, right? Because our minds are what kills us. But the heart, something happened inside of him in the heart. And remember, we talk about the fundamental idea of God is deep down inside all of us, right? And so he had gotten connected to this power. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. And what is a miracle? An extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. It's something that cannot be explained. Anybody think they're a miracle? I mean, I'm a miracle. I mean, the fact that I'm sitting here and whatever it is, October 17th, 2018, sober, reading this book, experience the life I have, it's a miracle. And then here's the part about me being a miracle. I don't take any credit for it. It's all the work of God. I don't take any credit for being able to teach tonight. That's what God's allowed me to do. And it's all God's power allowing him to work in my life. Now, he gave me ability to express and teach this, but the power comes from him. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. We get reorganized. Do you think we're disorganized when we come in here? Yeah, I mean, Jenny was just describing the people she's meeting in treatment. And the thing you learn, Jenny, is not to look down on these people, but to see yourself and how you don't want to be. And that's one of the great values of being around other people. He was on a different footing. His roots grasped a new soil. Now, where in the big book does it talk about our roots? Anybody remember on page 62?
Yeah.
You want to turn to that? Jimmy's not here, so I can change the pages. Page 62 is this powerful paragraph. It says, selfish is self-centered. That is the root of all my troubles. The root of my troubles is that I'm centered in me. And I'm a tree when I come in here. And my tree has roots in Michael's soil. And the bark looks like crap. And then the leaves are all ugly and falling apart. And that's my life when I come in here. That's all my anger and fears and my shame and guilt. And the bark of the tree is all my character defects that arise out of my self-centeredness. So what they say is plant your tree in a different soil and see what it looks like. So I try to plant my seed today in God's soil. And the bark, when I do that, is really nice. And the tree has all these flowers on it. And it's love and tolerance and patience and consideration. So when you come in, you've got this tree. Now, do you want to keep it or not? Because that tree has produced whatever's happened to you to get you here. It's nobody else. It's you in your soil. And so when he's talking about Ebby, he could see that Ebby was in a different soil. His roots were not in Ebby anymore. It was in God. And it says, now here's another great paragraph. Despite all this, the living example of my friend, there he is. There remained in me the vestiges of my own prejudice. Vestiges is traces of something, and his prejudice was his prejudgment about God. And we have a whole chapter on we agnostics, and you know what it's all about? Change your mind. Change your mind about God. Change your mind about your old ideas. And it says in there, I don't know the exact words, but it says in there that if we get rid of our prejudice and we're open-minded and willing and honest, then we cannot fail. The only thing that holds me back from succeeding in my life is my own ideas and my own prejudgment. I had that the other day. I wasn't going to finish Ozark. I told Mark I didn't like it. It's no good. Did 4 episodes. Silly. He says, well, okay, because he knows how I am. But he says it's pretty good. So then I said, well, whenever I've listened to Mark, things have always gone really well. So I'm going to watch Ozark. And damned if it wasn't good. How many times have I done that with the million shows? Because I decided it was no good, right? Now, the TV didn't come out and say, Michael, it's no good. Turn it off. I just decided I wasn't in the mood. Who knows? I'm an alcoholic. And it was great. So I look forward now to changing my mind. He says, the word God still aroused in me a certain antipathy, which is a deep-seated feeling of dislike. He didn't like the word God. And we could do a whole meeting on why alcoholics don't like the word God. But we don't want to be accountable, and we don't want to be responsible to anybody. When the thought was expressed that there might be a God personable to me, this feeling, that even made him worse. I didn't like the idea. See, he even understands himself. He just doesn't like the idea. And he could go for conceptions as creative intelligence, universal minor spiritual nature, but he didn't want a czar of the heavens. Because he didn't want to have somebody who had ultimate power over him, complete power. There's one who has all power, right? What do we call it? What do we call him? God, that's what it says. So God in AA is just that which has all power. There has to be something which has all power. His sway might be. I have since talked with scores of men who felt the same way. Now, how'd they do? Now, he had talked to scores of men who were alcoholics dying and who felt that way, but he was able to have some of them change their mind and recover and sober up. But he worked with a lot of people before he could get to Dr. Bob, before he could get one person that wanted to do this. My friend's suggestion would then seem a novel idea. This is a new kind of different idea. And he said, it's in italics. Now, there's some argument, did Ebbe really say these exact words and this and that? Who cares? Because the point is so powerful. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? Conception is the way in which something is perceived or regarded. Now, the reason that's so powerful is because if Bill has a conception of God, he can't argue with it. It's his conception. And we all have our own conception of God. And I've often said this. I don't know if I should say it again, but who cares? If you sit in church and you have 150 people in the service and they all worship Jesus, everybody's got a different idea of Jesus. They all. It's always a personal conception. And so it's always been that way. Now, it's when I try to tell Stu what my personal conception of his God, that he needs to have that, that's where we get in trouble. So this was one of the greatest things in my recovery, was when AA decided every person chooses your own conception of God. And I want to tell you, it changes over time. And it gets so exciting. He says, now here's a powerful paragraph. That statement hit me hard. Look what it did. It melted the icy intellectual mountain in whose shadow he had lived and shivered many years. Now think about this. This brilliant guy was living in the shadow of this icy intellectual mountain that he had built. And it was blocking the sunlight. And he was shivering. You see the picture? He built this mountain. He was probably proud of it. But it was killing him. And he had lived, and he stood in the sunlight at last. It melted these old ideas that had kept him from God. It just happened. People can talk when we have time about when that happened to them, when you changed your idea of God. Now here in the next paragraph, it's in italic squiggly writing. They call squiggly writing important. It says, it's only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. Now, how hard is that? It seems so easy, but for alcoholics, it's very hard. It's very hard to give up on ourselves. And willing to believe, nothing more was required to make my beginning, and that's step two. And so he knew he was defeated, right? And then he didn't like the idea of God, and then when he picked his own conception of God, it melted the icy intellectual mountain. So now he was willing to believe. You don't have to know what you're going to find. You just have to be willing to believe that there's a power greater than yourself. It doesn't even say God there. But it can't be you. It says, I saw that growth could start from that point. Now here's, I've given the handouts on the bridge to freedom. We're building an arch to freedom through which we walk a free man. Well, here's the beginning. Upon a foundation of complete willingness. So the foundation of the arch is complete willingness. Now, what makes an alcoholic willing? Pain, suffering, when they've finally had enough. Now, hitting bottom isn't when things are bad. Hitting bottom is when you've had enough, completely defeated, and you can't go on anymore. It's not because you got a ticket, or you're in the mission, or your husband left you. It's when inside, deep inside, you know you're done. You're completely licked. It has to be an inside job. And it's that moment when you realize you just can't go anymore like this. I need help. And that's when you're willing to do anything. You're willing to come to AA. You're willing to do the steps. Willingness. I might build what I saw in my friends. So we have to have complete willingness. 95% willingness will kill an alcoholic. Because the 5% you're not willing to do is going to block you from God. And he said, would I have it? Of course I would. Thus I was convinced. So the foundation's willingness and the cornerstone of the arch is just to believe. And then when we get to step three, the keystone of the arch is the decision that God's going to be in charge of your life. And then the steps complete the arch, 4 through 9. And you walk into step 10 and you're on the other side. You're in the world of the Spirit. And then 10 and 11 is how you work the steps all day long. So you stay over there. We were talking about the card, the left and right hand side. So you walk through the arch of freedom, and then you learn how to go from here to here all day long. And your life changes. He says, thus I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want him enough. See, I think God is always concerned with us, but we have to want him enough to seek him. It says, God can and would if he were sought. Has anybody heard that before? At long last, I saw, I felt, I believed. Now look at the scales. Scales are these things blocking his eyes. Of pride and prejudice fell from his eyes. Isn't that what happens to us in recovery? We see the world differently. A new world came into view. So a lot happened to him just by taking the first two steps. He'd given up on his pride. He'd given up on his prejudice. He was willing to let go of all of his old ideas completely, right? And he was willing to go to any length. And he saw a new world. It wasn't a hopeless world that he was living in before. A lot of people may remember when you first saw that new world, you saw that there was some hope, something had changed. If you're new, come back, find somebody, get in this book, and you'll see that new world. Things will change. The real significance of the experience in the cathedral burst upon him. For a moment, I had needed and wanted God. No problem. For a brief moment in the cathedral, he had needed and wanted God. That's when he was 21 and he was in England. There had been a humble willingness to have him with me. Humble is the key. He with a sense of powerlessness, meekness, willingness to have him with me, God with me, and he came. So he had that moment when he felt God inside. Has anybody else had that? And here's what he says, and this is what I do, and I think everybody in this room has done, and I did this for my whole life till I came in here. You can pray all morning, you can go to church, you can chant, you can quote Bible verses, but then the sense of his presence you blot out by worldly clamors, mostly those within himself. That's what I did. I blotted out the presence of God inside of me by worldly clamors, which is this loud or strong, noisy mess. And where are they? Within yourself. So I created this world and all these clamors, and God wasn't in it. Anybody get angry? Anybody get fearful? Anybody have harmful decisions, bad decisions? That's we blot out God because we're running the world. Now, blotting out God, I want to give you a hint, is not good. It doesn't work well. And for alcoholics, what we do in the steps is we unblot it. We unblot ourselves from God. That's all we do. And then God reveals himself to us. And so it had been ever since. How blind I had been. He was blind. Remember, we talk about we live in this world. We can't see the truth. We don't realize what we're doing. We're worshiping money and people and things and what we need and what we have to do to be happy. And we're in conflict with everybody and everyone. They don't treat us right. And then they get mad at us and we don't understand. People don't understand us. It's not fair. I'm such a good guy. I tried so hard. How can this be happening to me? Does that sound like the alcoholic theme song? And we say it automatically and then we don't feel good and then we drink. But we don't realize that we set the ball rolling by blotting out God and deciding what we needed to live. And that's what alcoholism is. It's sober, running the show, blocking out God, making a mess of everything. And then when you don't feel good sober, you drink or you use drugs. And at the hospital, so now he's going to the hospital, he's going to be separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. He was dying. Now the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs, I think, have changed the world. This is Bill W. in the hospital. He says, "There I humbly offered myself to God, meekly, coming to God as someone poor in spirit, somebody who's an undeserving sinner who needs help." Not from, okay, God, we're going to be a teammates here, you know? You're going to be my co-pilot. No. It's sort of a position of complete defeat of the actor going to the director. And he offered himself to God as I then understood him to do with me as he would. Doesn't that sound like the third step prayer? Mm-hmm. Now he's giving himself to God and he doesn't care what happens. God can do anything with him. Why? Because it's better than what he was doing without God. And don't we believe God wants what's best for us? Don't we believe that God loves us and will take care of us? So then why didn't we do this before we came in here? You see? And so we had moral and philosophical convictions galore, remember? We were going to do better. But we were always having God as our co-pilot, helping us. And when we're running the show, it never works. And then he said, I place myself unreservedly under his care and direction. Remember the warning after the third step prayer in the book. It says, remember, we must completely abandon ourselves to him, willing to completely abandon ourselves, all of me. If I hold anything back, then that area I'm blocking God. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. That's a powerful line. That was the first time. Now, I admit that every morning. You know why? I wake up, I say, God, I need your direction. You're going to direct me. Keep me sober. Divorce my thinking from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. God, I need you. Don't let me run the show today. And I have a whole soliloquy of things that I say fairly quickly, with the whole idea being, I don't have the power to run my life. I don't want to run my life. Please, Lord, don't let me run my life. I ruthlessly faced my sins. Now, sins are blockages from God. That's the fourth step. The manifestations of self, resentment, fear, shame, and guilt, conduct. And became willing to have my newfound friend, isn't that a good name for God? Take them away, root and branch. And that's step 6 and 7. I have not had a drink since. Think about it. He's in the hospital, he's dying, 1934. He lived till 1971. If that's not powerful. Remember, this book was written, there was no AA, there was no meetings. They envisioned, people get this book, they hope they'd start at page one. They were alcoholics, you don't know. And start at page one, read doctor's opinion, find out the problem, and then read this story. And this is the first thing that alcoholics would read to describe what happened to this man. Think how powerful that is. 1939, no hope, just this book. No meetings, no places to go for treatment, nothing. So when you look at it that way, it's very powerful how it's written. My schoolmate, so Ebby visited him in the hospital, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies, so he took the fifth step with Ebby. They made a list of people he had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong, steps 8 and 9. So you see, in these two paragraphs, Bill's taking steps 1 through 9. Never was I to be critical of everybody. I was to write all such matters to the utmost of my ability. Now, it's really important to go through this. Remember, the first time people read this, they didn't know what the steps were, because they hadn't gotten to page 58 yet. See what I mean? And they didn't know about how it works and the promises and all this other stuff. And so I think it's very, very well written. And very powerful. And he says, I'm going to test my thinking. He has a new way of seeing things by my new God consciousness within. Now, isn't step 11, what does step 11 say? We seek to improve what? Conscious contact with God. Now, why is conscious contact with God good? Because when I'm in contact with God, I'm in the now, and I'm not in fear and anger. And I'm not in my alcoholism. I'm not in self. So the whole deal is pretty simple. Stay in contact with God all day long, the rest of your life. And we have steps to tell us how to do it. Now, we're not going to be there all the time. We separate, but then we get back. And steps 10 and 11 are how we do that all day long. And 4 through 9 is how we get initial contact with God when we've lived the self-centered life. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt. This is page 86. They talk about this. When in doubt, asking only. This is the only thing I'm supposed to ask for from God. Not a new car, the Chiefs score one more touchdown, things like that. For direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. So we talked about problems today. You're going to have God's direction and strength to meet those problems. And then they become situations. Now, here's another powerful thing. It says this on page 86. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my requests bore my usefulness to others. Now, I've heard people say, well, I need a new Mercedes so I can take more people to the meetings. I don't think that's what they're talking about here. But you see, we could distort anything, right? We're alcoholics. Then only might I expect to receive. You see, if I want to be useful to others, then I'm going to get so much back. That's the whole AA program, service to God, service to others. Then you get everything you need if you stay close to God and do His works well. Then only might I expect to receive, that would be in great measure. Every time I read these next two paragraphs, I don't know, it makes me a little bit emotional because it's such powerful stuff. So Ebby promised, this is the first promises in the big book. Ebby promised him, when these things were done that he had done these steps, he's going to seek God's direction, strength all day long. He's going to try to be useful to others. When these were done, then what does he have? He enters in a new relationship with his Creator. Notice the word new. The old relationship with God was that he lived as God didn't exist, right? He ran the show. And he'd go to God when he needed something, but he wasn't giving his life over to God like he did in those first two paragraphs. So God is now God. And remember it says in step three, we had to quit playing God, right? Why? It didn't work. Why? Because I'm not God. And so one of the things we have to realize is that we were playing God and we're not God. So whenever we tried to manage the world, it was insane for us to do so. And when he has this new relationship, which we call a spiritual awakening, he has the elements of a way of living which answered all his problems. Now the elements make up the world. So now he has all the elements through this relationship with God which will answer any problem he has. We talk about that. We don't have problems anymore when you're in recovery. We only have situations. And then I go to God and how do I react? What do I do? I gave her the St. Francis prayer in the back. What do I bring in every situation? And then things work out differently than they did before. This way of living will lead to a life of peace. And that's where the ninth step promises come in. So here's what's required. Believing in the power of God. Anybody believe that? Good. Now, you have to believe in the power of God, but that's not enough. You need to be willing to do the steps. You need to be honest about your situation, see the truth in steps 4 through 9. Humble to seek God all the time. And then you establish in steps 4 through 9, and you maintain in steps 10, 11, the new order of things, where the essential requirements. Now, where do they talk about the we're putting our lives in order? Does anybody remember? Well, it's on page 77, and they're in the eighth and ninth step, and it says, we're trying to put our lives in order. And so what do they mean? Well, the first three steps put my life in order with God. My life was out of order with God. I was playing God. So I don't want to do that anymore. So I'm going to have God be God, and I'll just be the actor, and He'll direct me. Then steps 4 through 7 is I'm putting my mind in order with the truth. I'm seeing the truth about my thinking, my self-centered thinking, and how I don't want to live on my fears and my resentments and my conduct. And we learn how to let go of that. And then 8 and 9 is how I put my life in order with the world, all the people I resented, all the people I was in conflict with. And when we've done that, we've really changed things, right? And then steps 10, 11, and 12, I do those actions all day long to stay in conscious contact. Now notice, it's the essential requirements. So the essential requirements is that you do steps 4 through 9, 11, 10 through 12, if you want what they have. And I will guarantee, if you've done steps 4 through 9 the best you can, and you're living in 10, 11, 12, you're not going to drink again. It's not going to happen. It just can't, because God won't let you drink. Unless you choose to do drinking, and you choose it, then you're not in steps 1 through 12. You're back in self. Simple, but not easy. I quote this a lot. It sounds pretty simple, right? A price had to pay. There's no free lunch. It meant destruction of my self-centeredness. It has to be destroyed. Now here's the problem. I don't know how to do that. Did you know how to do it? The way we destroy our self-centeredness is we let go of it and God takes it away. We just let go. We just say, God, take away this self-centered thought, the self-centered idea. Turn away from me. Now, does anybody think in this room? Anybody have thinks? Occasionally? Anybody get thoughts come in your head? All right. I have thoughts come in my head, and I used to believe them. But I've learned now that my thoughts aren't always true. And I have to, I don't want to act on all of them. And I asked my thinker, because I'm not sure my thinker always has my best interests in heart. What's its source of information? Now, I'll give you an example. I'll judge somebody in this room isn't going to do the steps right, or they're not doing, or they're not listening to me, or some nonsense. They don't like me. I can see how they're looking at me. You know how we know everything. And then I'll make a judgment. Well, that's not, who told me that? My thinker. Well, my thinker, where'd you get that information? Well, he just, it doesn't exist, you see. We don't want to live on things that aren't true anymore. We want to live on the truth. And so we destroy our self-centeredness constantly by looking at our thinking. It says we watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Remember that? When these crop up, we ask God to wants to remove them. So this whole thing, this destruction of self-centeredness is a process. And we don't do it perfectly every day. Because at night we have this step, in step 11, where we reviewed the day and we look at where we were selfish. And we ask ourselves, were we kind and loving to all? What could we have done better? What corrective measures should we take? So all day long, we're not perfect. We're always going to be self-centered, but we don't want to live that way. So we learn in 10 how to stop, and in 11 we learn how to look at it and pray and meditate and live differently. And if you do it, each day gets a little better. You never get perfect, but your life changes. And it changes automatically when you see things. It says, I must turn. Now, you're going to turn. Turn is a powerful word in the big book. Turn means to really turn. And what are you turning from? You're turning from your self-centeredness to the Father of Light, who presides over us all. Now, it says God can and will if he is sought. Anybody agree with that? And that's what they mean. If you see God and you turn yourself over to him, he's going to take you. So the riddle of our existence is why we don't give everything to God right away all the time. And they talk about that in step 6. It's the riddle of our existence. But we have the tools now. So I'm going to stop there. I talked a long time, but these pages have meant a lot to me. And if you study them, and you can listen to this tape again if you want, I think you'll see the whole program, how we do it, the result, and how we stay in this relationship with God. So thank you, guys, and we'll open up. We have some short time. Thanks for listening.